Meryl.
Cody Stove.
Cody Stove.
Cody Stove. There will be two handouts today. One is on every Yeshem webpage. It's the first link. It's basically the summary of the various years, including 5780. And that will just be for the verse that we use to connect to certainty. And then the main handout will be on the Unique Astrological Times landing page. And you'll find that underneath the two pictures on the right of every Yeshem webpage or on mobile devices. It's usually at the bottom. When that landing page opens up, please scroll down to Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan 5780, and that will be the main handout. And as we do normally do with Rosh Chodesh, we start out connecting to the verse for certainty, and we will be doing the Anabikoach later in the class. Chodesh Tov. Jasmine.
Cut the stove, everyone.
Randala. Cut the stove.
So I will start with the Lashem Yehud and then the Sulam commentary on the Zohar, Parashat Yitro, Pasuk 29, that we utilize as the tool to connect to the energy of certainty. L'shem Yehud Kutchabrechu Ishkinte Bidkilu Urchimu Udkilu Udkilu Urchimu Leachta L'shem Yure Bavavhe The Yehuda Shalim B'shem Kol Yisrael Limud Torah Mitzvah Lasok Torah Mitzvah Vayihino Am Adonai Eloheinu Aleinu Maasei Yadeinu Kananei Aleinu Maasei Yadeinu Kananeihu Pasuk 29 Rabbi Abba Amar, the Kamatar, Tane Nandakucha, Berihu, Komad Yaved, Leela Witata, Kolaihu, Kishot, Bilvada, Tikshot, Beleila, Bila, Bialma, Divae Barnash, Vedahya Leya, Mine ya ulan haga, pe ya kalana, tehakulu ovada, tikshot inun wikola itzterich, pe alma. And now we will transfer to the Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan 5780 link. And if you'll scroll down to the section that is titled New Entry About Cheshvan for the year 5780, it's approximately a half an inch down in this when you scroll. Remember, astrology is not about telling the future. Nobody can do that, and certainly no student of Kabbalah tries to do that. By understanding the energy of each month, we are able to navigate smoothly through the month, because one cannot act the same way every month. Every month has a different energy. And it helps to know what that specific energy is. The Book of Formation, ascribed to Abraham Avinu, tells us that without knowing astrology, it is very difficult to lead a life without chaos. Cheshvan is one of the strangest months of the whole year. Its name is actually Mar Cheshvan. The word mar in Hebrew means bitter. Why would a month be called bitter? One of the reasons given is that there are no holidays in Cheshvan. And another is that the flood of Noah started on the 17th day of Cheshvan. However, ask most people and they will tell you that Cheshvan is always a very difficult month. And this is usually true. But it does not need to be so. So how can we make this month a sweet month? First of all, Cheshvan is one of the most powerful months of the year. In fact, Cheshvan is most probably the loftiest of all of the months. There is more energy in this month than any of the months. To understand Cheshvan, we need to go back to Tishrei. Tishrei is the most spiritual month of the year, with all of the holidays. 22 days from Rosh Hashanah to Simchat Torah. We are able to tap straight into the Sefirah of Bina the whole month. The problem is that Tishrei is only potential. For example, Sukkot is all about accumulating surrounding and inner light for the whole year. One rabbi said it was like winding a watch and then letting it unwind the whole year. If Tishrei is all about potential, Cheshvan is all about starting to manifest that potential. The problem is that the holidays in Tishrei are very long. And when they are finished, most people just want to rest and take a break. This is the reason Cheshvan becomes a bitter month. In Tishrei, people are davening a lot, giving tzedakah, sitting in the sukkah, and generally doing a lot more mitzvot than they normally do. To manifest this energy, we have to keep up that pace that was started in Tishrei. We need to keep it up in Cheshvan. We are on such a high level after all the holidays that a fall can be very steep. If we stop doing the spiritual work we started in Tishrei, then Cheshvan becomes Mar, bitter. Yet if you change the letters of Mar, which is Mem Resh, around, it becomes Ram, elevated, Resh and Mem. Hashem is watching us, waiting, and hoping to see if we keep our promises to change, to meet the promises and vows that we made in Tishrei. Cheshvan is a month of extremes. Either it is bitter or elevated. There is no in between. This is the secret to this month. Keep up with all the mitzvot from Tishrei, and I guarantee that Cheshvan will be a very elevated month. Keep the excitement of Tishrei going. Cheshvan has the most energy of all the months, and the third temple will be dedicated during the month of Cheshvan. Will it be in the year 5780? We are taught to think so. We are taught to know so. We are taught to have certainty that tonight the temple will appear. And if Chas V'Shalom it does not, we will again know with certainty that it will appear tomorrow. Remember, in Tishrei 5780, over 800 men from the tribe of Levi, sang songs and psalms from the biblical times on the holy mount above the western wall. This was the first time in approximately 2,000 years that that event took place. It wasn't complete because we didn't have the sacrifices. But we are moving in that direction. As mentioned above, the Great Flood started on the 17th of the month. Some say that the month is named Mar or bitter because of the flood. The question we need to ask is, there have been many disasters throughout history. So why is this one singled out? And why was water used to destroy the world? The internal energy of water is chesed, mercy. Actually, chesed is loving kindness. Water always flows to the lowest ground to share. It's always flowing to share with more and to share more of itself. Seawater is also a very good conductor of electricity, and the body and most foods are made mostly of water. The fetus is also surrounded by amniotic fluid, which is 98% water. What does all of this mean? In Judaism, there is something called a mikveh, a ritual bath. After a woman has had her menstrual cycle, it is a requirement for her to go to and dip in the mikveh. If she does not go to the mikveh, she is not allowed to go with her husband. The idea is that during her cycle, she is impure, and only after she has dipped in the mikveh does she become pure and is able to go with her husband. The mikveh is most probably the most important mitzvah that a woman has. It's actually the first building that is constructed in any Jewish community. For men, the mikveh is not an obligation, but most Haredi or religious men go to the mikveh every morning before they pray. It is a big deal for them. One reason for men to do so is the attribute of modesty. Every ejaculation of sperm requires a cleansing of the mikveh. Since no one wants others to know when they have been with their wives, or chas v'shalom, a wet dream, they go to the mikveh every day. Some follow the teachings of the Ari to dip in the mikveh every 3 days. For some, they utilize some lenient views that depending on the water flow, a modern shower suffices, providing the length exceeds approximately 40 minutes. For all techniques, there are meditations associated with the first two verses of the Ana Bekoach, in addition to the cleansing, in addition to the cleansing water. What is the secret of the mikveh? The mikveh creates a protection shield around the person and purifies them. When one goes under the water, metaphysically, they die. Humans cannot survive underwater. When this happens, all their negativity dies as well, and theoretically they come up a new, pure person. It is difficult to keep this state, but this is what happens. One can keep this state as long as they contemplate Hashem and the words of Torah. This is the secret of the mikveh, the ability to purify oneself. With this in mind, we can start to understand why Hashem used water to destroy the world. Before the Great Flood, the world was full of sexual immorality and thievery. And the only way that Hashem could purify the world of this negativity was the chesed. the loving kindness of water. Scorpio, the month of Cheshvan, the Hebrew months always are consistent with the astrological sign. So when you say Cheshvan, you're saying the astrological sign of Scorpio. And when you say Scorpio, you are saying the astrological month of Cheshvan, the Hebrew month of Cheshvan. Cheshvan is a water sign, but it is the left column of the three water signs. Hashem used the judgment of water as a means to cleanse the world. If Hashem has destroyed the world by some other means, it would not have been able to return the world to its original pure state. And therefore, Cheshvan was the only month that Hashem could use. It was a big chesed. So in fact, the argument that Cheshvan is a negative month because of the flood is actually not a valid one. One negative aspect that must be dealt with from the act of the flood is some of the water arose from the earth with fire, attached in its elevated boiling temperature. This changed the merciful ways of water, since fire is judgment. The only way to restore water that humans consume is to say a blessing prior to consuming all forms of water. And this includes ice and snow as well. It is interesting to note that Cheshvan is called the first Rosh Chodesh of the year, yet it is not. Tishrei is. We don't say Kodesh Tov on the first of Tishrei, we say Shana Tova, Good New Year. The first of Cheshvan is the most powerful day of the year besides the Shabbat and the holidays. Cheshvan is the eighth month of the year, just as Tishrei is the seventh. Cheshvan, connecting to the number eight, connects to the month, to the world of Bina, to the energy store of Bina, to the mikvah of Bina. All of these connections happen because Cheshvan is the first Rosh Chodesh of the year, the first time we say Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh is the seed of a month, and the whole month is encapsulated in Rosh Chodesh. Being the first Rosh Chodesh of the year, there is a lot of energy to tap into. Take advantage of this day. That's this day, this evening, tomorrow, up until sundown. Take advantage of this connection to the number eight, to Bina. Take advantage of this energy that is available on Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan. It only comes around once a year. Learn a bit more Torah on Rosh Chodesh of each month, but especially on Cheshvan. Many people think, oh, we had all these holidays in Tishrei, you know, we've done enough spiritual work. But the main point is to continue and maintain your spiritual work. Maintain it, which means to study more Torah on Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan. To give tzedakah on Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan. To do more good deeds on Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan. And there are other ideas of doing positive actions on Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan. The tikkun, or the correction of people born in Cheshvan, is that they love to control. They will do anything for people. They love to give gifts, all with the consciousness of an agenda. If I give somebody a gift, that person becomes obligated to me. And through that obligation, they think, the Cheshvan people, the Scorpio people, think they can control the person they've given the gift to. The problem is that with those gifts is a hidden agenda to control the person. They usually do these good deeds because they want people to owe them favors. Their tikkun is to do these deeds for Hashem and not for their calculations. They're also very aware of surroundings around them and will notice specific details about people and places. Yet they are very secretive and hide their actions. They make great detectives and spies because they're hiding everything about them. The animal that is associated with the month of Cheshvan is the scorpion. What are the characteristics of a scorpion? First, he has a very dangerous sting. And second, he is the only animal that will commit suicide if he is backed into a corner. For example, if he's surrounded by fire. The Scorpio is the only animal that when the person goes into crisis, into fear-based reactions, they will eat their children. This is the nature of the scorpion animal. And it is also the nature of the scorpion human being. Both of my parents were scorpions. And I can speak directly to this issue of the child being overwhelmed when the parent, the scorpion parent, goes into crisis. Scorpios can be very dangerous people if you get on their wrong side. Especially women born in this month, they will have a tendency to be jealous, verging on the aspect of zealousness. They have a big sting and they love revenge. They don't care if they hurt themselves as long as they get revenge, even up to committing suicide, chas v'shalom. This is another tikkun of people born in Cheshvan, to realize that everything is from Hashem and not to take things personally. The line of the Ana Mekoach associated with the month is the third month, the third line. And the letters of the month are Dalet and Nun. Together they spell the Hebrew word Din, which translates as judgment. In olden days, they didn't call the Sefirot Chesed and Gevurah. They called it Gedola, meaning large, and Din, judgment. Scorpio is a water sign, but the left column of these three water signs, which are Cheshvan, Cancer, and Pisces. Scorpios have a lot of energy. If they are interested in something, they go all the way. But if they are not that interested, it is very difficult to get them excited about a project. The animal Scorpio seems to be very cold-blooded. It is said that when one is saying the Amidah, the standing prayer, they may not move until they've finished it. This is the halakha that is recommended by the Orthodox world. But if you see a scorpion while you are praying the Amidah, it is a mitzvah for you to go and kill it. A snake, you must stand still, even if it wraps around your legs. A snake will only bite a human being because that's the order of Hashem. The scorpion will sting because it's in crisis, not because of what Hashem has ordered. You remember that these traits, even though they apply to people born in this month, everybody will have these tikkunim, these challenges this month. It will affect people differently based on their own tikkunim, their own corrections. But the energy, the astrological influence is going to push people in these directions. There are no holidays in Cheshvan, as we said, but there are two yahrzeits in this month, which are very powerful yahrzeits. Actually, they're hilulas, because the people are righteous. First, on the 11th of Cheshvan, we have the yahrzeit of Rachel Imenu, Rachel, our mother. And that same day, we have the Hilulah of Methuselah. Methuselah is the longest living human being. He lived 969 years. This is an indication of the power and the strength of the month of Cheshvan. The 11th of Cheshvan is a very powerful day, and we can get as much from this day as some holidays. Why? To give some background, Rachel died because of the evil eye. Yaakov unknowingly put a curse on her when he said to Laban, "With whomever you find your gods, he shall not live." Yaakov did not know that Rachel had taken her father's idols. Because she died from evil eye, she became the antidote to evil eye. By connecting to Rachel on her yahrzeit, we receive the power to protect ourselves from this form of negativity. Also, Rachel sat on the idols, some say during her nidah period, thereby treating them with no respect, denigrating them. And this is a big lesson for us. When we acknowledge negative things, we give them power. Step on negativity. Don't recognize it. Don't confirm it, especially in the month of Cheshvan, because you do not want to give negativity power anytime, but especially during Cheshvan. When we acknowledge negative things, we give them power. Step on the negativity. Rachel is also the mother of Israel, and she will surely look after us if we do our spiritual work. When the first temple was destroyed and the Jews were being led into captivity, Abraham, Yitzhak, Yaakov, and Moshe Rabbeinu prayed for them. Hashem did not accept their prayers, but when Rachel prayed for them, Hashem accepted her prayers. Why? Hashem remembered Rachel. What did Hashem remember about Rachel? He remembered how Rachel gave her sister the signs that she and Yaakov had agreed on so that she would not be embarrassed when Laban tricked Jacob about who he was marrying. Not only did she give Leah the signs, but she made Leah feel like Yaakov really wanted to marry her. Rachel went the extra mile, so much so that Leah once told Rachel, "You nearly took my husband." Jacob had no intention of marrying Leah until he married her. And then he was happy with the fact that he had these two wives and he had the two handmaids as wives. Yaakov and Rachel were some soulmates from the time of creation. Yaakov loved Rachel deeply and was pained that he could not be buried with her. He knew that one day the Jews would try to pass her grave and she would pray for them, and Hashem would accept her prayers. She said to Hashem that just as she did not want to embarrass her sister, so too Hashem should not get upset that Bnei Yisrael went against Hashem. When Hashem heard her words, he was comforted and said he would not forsake Bnei Yisrael. Don't take this lightly, for Yortzeit is a very big segula for protection, and we can learn a lot from the midot, the character traits of Rachel. She was so selfless that she is the matriarch who is called the mother of Israel. Her son Yosef also was able to master the ability to get rid of the evil eye, to not be affected by it. We also have the Yortzeit of Rabbi Abraham Azulai on the 21st of Cheshvan. He was born in Morocco in 1570 and died in Hebron in 1643. He was very well respected, and this most famous book is called Chesed LeAbraham, the mercy, the loving kindness of Abraham. This is a very deep Kabbalistic book, and below is an extract from it. There is more translated on the Yeshem.com website, but to my knowledge, it has not been completely translated into English. You should know that the amount of undrawn water necessary for a mikveh to be kosher is a volume equal to the displacement of 5,760 eggs. You need 40 seah for a mikveh. A seah is approximately 22 liters, one for each Hebrew letter. There is the volume of 144 eggs in one seah. Multiply 40 times 144 and you get 5,760. The secret regarding this is that at the end of the 5,760th year from creation, the verse, God will remove the impure spirit from the land, will become fulfilled, as well as the verse, I will give peace in the land, and you will lie down, and no one will make you tremble, and I will remove the evil beast from the land. That is the forces of spiritual impurity, as is mentioned in the Zohar. The mystery of the matter is that there are three periods of resurrection of the dead in the future, at three different times. The first resurrection will be of the dead of Eretz Yisrael. The second resurrection of the dead will be Chutz La'aretz, outside of Israel. And the third resurrection will be that of the 70 nations and the rest of the world. It will be a time of great judgment. The third resurrection will be at the end of the 5,760th year from creation. That was the solar year of the year 2000. The commentary by Keith Halevi, a very close friend of mine, a student of Kabbalah. On Friday afternoon at noon, which is three quarters of the way through Friday, the day starts at night. We start to feel the energy of the Shabbat. The year 5750 in the cosmic calendar is noontime on Friday. The same as we start feeling Shabbat on a regular Friday. From the year 5750, we will start feeling the energy of the cosmic Shabbat, which is the energy of Mashiach. And from personal experience, that year was 1990, and there was a big influx of people learning Kabbalah, people who were not religious, people who were not Orthodox, people who had never heard of it, found people to teach them Kabbalah between 1990 and 2000. Rabbi Avraham Azulai says that we will need another 10 years connecting to the 10 Sefirot for cleansing, which brings us to the year 5760. Which is the year he talks about in his book, Hesed L'Avraham. He says that from this year, 5760, which is the year 2000, we will start to feel the energy of Mashiach. So since 2000, we have been in the period of the birth pangs of Mashiach. It is written in the Zohar that the Mashiach can come in two ways, either through loving kindness and mercy, or through judgment, chas v'shalom. If we look back at the last 19 years, we can see the prophecy of Rabbi Azulai is starting to come true. There is terrible judgment and chaos in the world. With all the terrorism and wars going on, especially in the Middle East, and the fluctuations in the financial market, people are more scared than ever. Also, the technology revolution that has taken place over the last 20 years is out of control and crazy to most people. Who would have believed 20 years ago that we would be able to do with our phones what we can do today? This might seem a good thing, but it is actually destroying the society. Families don't sit down to a meal and bond anymore. Everybody is off with their own form of screen. One rabbi called it the curse of the screens. What are the kids born today going to be like in 20 years? Only Hashem knows. The only way to protect ourselves is to have complete faith in Hashem and to do His work. Don't give power to problems. They are not real. They are an illusion. They might look real, but they are an illusion. I guarantee if you keep up your work in Tishrei, or you work from Tishrei in Cheshvan, Hashem will surely grant you a great month, a great year, a great decade, which will bring you your personal Mashiach. Or the total Mashiach. The year ahead is going to be filled with many challenges. Be strong and have complete bidachon, trust, and badai, certainty, in Hashem, and Hashem's chesed, His loving kindness. The bottom line is that this month is a bitter month, not because of the flood, or because of no holidays. The sages are trying to teach us that there is so much energy in this month, and if one doesn't harness it, it will burn you and become bitter. Remember, one of the traits of this month is it's extreme. There is no middle ground. Remember this. Keep on with your spiritual work and turn the month into an elevated month. Ram Cheshvan. Here is a story about Rabbi Azulai. It's titled The Fallen Sword of the Sultan. In the early 1640s, the Sultan of the Ottoman Empire made a journey from his seat of government in far-off Turkey to places of importance in his domains. He made his way to the Cave of Machpelah in Hebron. He entered, adorned in his traditional ruling garb, including the golden sword studded with diamonds and precious stones, which hung at his side. The Sultan wandered from room to room, finally entering the huge hall named after the patriarch Yitzhak. The center of attraction in the Yitzhak Hall is a small circular hole in the floor. Near the wall, shared with the smaller Avram Hall, the hole is perhaps the most sacred spot in the entire illustrious structure, above the burial caves of the patriarchs and matriarchs, for it leads down into the caves themselves. Pilgrims from all over the world journey for weeks and months just to have the opportunity to stand by this small, dark, circular opening, leading into the cave, which, according to tradition, was excavated by Adam, the first man. The Sultan leaned over the revered aperture, peering down into it. As he bent over, his precious sword fell from his side, down into the cavity in the ground. Hearing the clang of metal hitting the ground, the Sultan realized that his sword lay in the caves underneath. The Sultan called the officer of the guard and ordered him to lower a soldier through the hole in the cave to retrieve his sword. Quick to respond to the Sultan's order, the officer selected a soldier nearby. Another soldier wrapped a rope around his waist and lowered the soldier into the underground cavern. No sooner had they done so when, without warning, piercing screams penetrated from inside the hole below. Quickly, they pulled up the soldier, but he was dead. The Sultan ordered that another soldier be lowered into the caves, and so it was. And his fate was precisely as his predecessor's. Quickly, they pulled up the soldier, but he was dead. The Sultan continued to send soldiers into the caves until it became apparent that all who entered the caves do not exit alive. The Sultan turned to his hosts and exclaimed, "Who will return to me my sword?" The Arabs looked at one another, answered without hesitating, "Why not send down a Jew? If he dies, none of us would care, and if not, you will have your precious saber back." So the Jews were ordered on pain of death to supply a volunteer to be lowered into the caves, to return the Sultan's sword to him. The Jews of Hebron had heard what happened to the Sultan's soldiers. How could they send one of their own to his death? They prayed and they fasted, hoping to avert the decree. Realizing that they had no choice, they looked at one another. Who would dare to enter the sacred caves of the patriarchs? The elderly rabbi of the community, the Kabbalist and sage, Rabbi Avraham Azulai, author of Chesed L'Avraham, solved the dilemma. "I will enter the holy caves, have no fear." And so it was. After praying and pleading before the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Rabbi Avraham Azulai immersed himself in the mikveh and dressed in a white garment, the traditional dress of the dead. he set forth to the cave of Machpelah. With a rope tied around his waist, Rabbi Azulai was lowered into the cave. When his feet hit the ground, Rabbi Azulai looked around him and found standing by his side three bearded men. "We are your forefathers," they told him, "Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov." Rabbi Azulai was dumbfounded. Finally, he said to them, "Why should I leave here and go back above? I am elderly, and here I have found my forefathers. I desire only to stay here with you. Why should I leave here and go back above?" The patriarchs insisted, "You must return the sword to the Sultan. If not, the entire Jewish community of Hebron is liable to be wiped out. But have no fear. In another 7 days, you will return here to be with us." So the saintly rabbi returned to the Yitzhak Hall above, the cave of the patriarchs, and with him was the Sultan's sword. The Sultan was pleased. Upon seeing their beloved rabbi return alive, the Jews of Hebron declared the day a holiday. Rabbi Abraham Azulai spent the next week with his students, teaching them all of the esoteric teachings of the Torah. Day and night, he learned with them, instructing them, imparting to them all that he knew. 7 days after being lowered into the cave of Machpelah, Rabbi Abraham Azulai returned his soul to his maker. Dying peacefully in his home, he was brought to rest in the ancient Jewish cemetery in Hebron, overlooking the final resting place of his beloved forefathers, Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. Here is another thought about Scorpio. I heard a lecture from Rabbi Alon Anava, who is presently hospitalized, and we need to pray for his refuah shlema, a complete healing. Rabbi Anava has had a near-death experience at the age of 29, and he spent approximately the last 10 years after that learning to be an Orthodox Jew and a Kabbalist student. And he has been teaching Kabbalah for the last 5 to 10 years. I have studied with him. So I hope all of my students will pray for his recovery. But it is good to know, you do not have to pray for someone who is ill more than once. When you do so, some people teach that you are saying to Hashem you don't trust your own prayers. Others say you need to pray every day until the person recovers, because each day is a different energy. Each of you can choose your own minhag, your own custom with this respect. But please pray for Rabbi Anava. But in this lecture that my friend Keith heard about Scorpio, he made an interesting point about the month of Heshvan. Everything I have read about Scorpio says that it is the most powerful month. But why? I've never really heard an answer until I heard this lecture. And let me explain, let Keith explain. The tribe associated with Scorpio is Menashe. Menashe had a special quality. What was that? He did not complain when Yaakov blessed his younger brother, Ephraim, before him. He didn't mind being second. He was mevater. And what does this mean? He gave in. He accepted it without protest. This is a very big midah, a character trait. Being mevater reflects a profound understanding that Hashem is in charge of our lives. If something happens and a person is mevater, he realizes that the situation is exactly the way Hashem wants it. Menashe understood this, and that is why he was quiet. There are many stories of people who gave in when they were right, and afterwards miracles happened for them. Try this. You will be amazed at how it creates miracles for you. When a man gives in to his wife, he brings down all kinds of blessings on himself and his family, and also when he gives in to others. To give some background, from the beginning of time, there was always strife between brothers, Cain and Abel, Shem and Japheth against Ham, Yitzhak and Ishmael, Yaakov and Esav, Yosef and his brothers. This recurring theme is very important because none of these brothers were able to do the tikkun, the correction of achdut, of unity. Unity is one of the most powerful forces in the universe. And Chazal says that if the Jews were unified, they would bring the redemption immediately. It also says that if thieves are unified, they will be successful. This is the power of Achdut, of unity. We also know that Hashem hates mechlokets, arguments, more than anything. When the Jews did the sin of the golden calf and the spies, the manna still fell on those days. Yet when Korach had a machloket with Moshe, that day the manna did not fall. This tikkun, this correction, is one of the biggest tests in everybody's life, and one that is with us all the days of our lives. When Yaakov crossed his hands and wanted to bless the younger one first, Yosef told his father that this was wrong. Yosef thought that here we go again with the strife between the brothers. Yet there was not a sound out of Menashe. In all the writings, there is not a word that he complained. This was Menashe's special quality. He was mevater. Even though he was a big shot, he was the oldest. He was Yosef's right-hand man. He did not mind being second. He was happy for his brother. When he kept quiet, he was able to accomplish this tikkun of unity. This is a very powerful character trait to have. To be happy for others with no jealousy. Later we see that Moshe and Aaron, they perfected this tikkun of Achdut. Moshe did not want to accept the job of the Redeemer because he was the younger, and Aaron was very happy for Moshe when he came to Egypt, even though he was the older. Their relationship was the perfect one, and that they cared more about the other one than themselves. This is an amazing chidush, a new teaching. Why is unity so powerful? There are a few reasons, and they are all very powerful. We know that the sin of hatred for no reason, sinat chinam, was the cause of the Second Temple being destroyed, and also the reason we are still in the galut, in the exile. The antidote for hatred for no reason is love for no reason, ahavat chinam. Love for no reason comes about because there is unity between two parties. We know that the acronym for the first line of the prayer, Ana Bekoach, has a numerology of 506, which is also the numerology of ahavat chinam, love for no reason. This acronym is a very powerful force and can be used in our everyday life to help relationships with difficult people. Also from Menashe, we learn that he didn't complain, yet he let go of his ego. Most people would be upset that they were passed over and would complain. From Menashe's action, we can use this to get rid of our ego. Humility is one of the more powerful character traits and connects to the Sefirah of Keter. Also, Rabbi Akiva told us that love thy neighbor is one of the most important laws in the Torah. And this is a very deep subject, but one of the teachings is that even though it is very difficult to love a stranger as much as your family, who are your closest neighbors, the idea is to want for your neighbor as much as you want for yourself. You want $1 million? You must want the same or more for your neighbor. If you want a Rolls Royce, you must want a Rolls Royce for your neighbor. And if you want love in your life, you must want love for your neighbors and his family. This was the power of Menashe. He was happy for his brother. From the above, we see that in this month, we have the ability to connect to all these forces. Unity, love for no reason, love thy neighbor and humility. This is the power of this month of Cheshvan. So much energy, it is said that the light of Cheshvan is the most authentic light. Being able to connect to these qualities makes this month the most powerful, and the reason that the third temple will be dedicated in this month. Turn the bitterness, the mar, into the sweetness, the ram. Kodesh Tov. The permutation of the name of Hashem for the month is Yud Hey Hey Wav. We will now say together the Ana Bakoa. Please join me. Ana Bakoa Gedulat Yemincha Tati Seruva Aleph Gimel Yutaf Tzadi. The six letters have a gematria, as we said, of 506, which connects to Ahavat Hinam, unconditional love. Please meditate on these six letters and build your essence of loving kindness for the month. Kabel rinat amcha sagvenu taharenu nora ufreshayan sintet nun. These six letters spell two Hebrew words, pra, which means to tear up, and satan, which is the energy force of the negative system. The same six letters can be permutated, rearranged, to spell Sha'arkatan. It sounds similar, but its translation means small gates. And it's an indication to us as the teaching of the Baal Shem Tov. Guard your gates. Guard your eyes. Guard your ears. Guard your nose. And especially guard your mouth, to only say words of Torah and not Lashon Hara. Na Gibor Your shame who you are, give shamble. Nun Gimel Dalet, Yud Kaf Shin. The first three letters, Nun Gimel Dalet, have a gematria of 57, which connects to the Hebrew word zan, which means parnassah, sustenance, the fulfillment of all of your desires. Yud Kaf Shin, the last three letters, connects as a healing sequence, which allows us to take any part of our body that needs healing, take that part of the body out of your body where you can restore it, you can heal it, you can rejuvenate it, and then bring it back into the body where it will again do its job as it was created to do. The letters of the month associated with this third verse and the month of Cheshvan. The letter Dalet, which created the month, the planet Ma'adim, the planet Mars, the planet of war and battle, which supplies the strength to the restraints associated with Givurah. And the letter Nun, which created the constellation Akrav. Akrav is the name of the scorpion. If you look at the spelling of Akrav, it's Ayin, Kuf, Resh, Bet. Kuf and Resh spell the Hebrew word cold. Akrav, the scorpion, has the energy of the Ayin Bet, the 72 names of God. But it's separated by the coldness. The coldness of indifference. The coldness of reaction. The coldness that separates us from Hashem. When we continue to do our spiritual work associated with the month of Cheshvan, like we did in Tishrei, we remove the car, the coldness, and we unite the iron with the bet so that we have a house where we can see the truth. The permutation of the name of Hashem, which you should use from this point forward until tomorrow, the Wednesday at sundown. And please stand and dance with me. Sing with me. Yo, hey, hey, wa, yo, hey, hey, wa, yo, hey, hey, wa, yo, hey, hey, wa. Hey yo, hey hey wa, yo 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 hey hey wa, yo. Yo, hey, hey, wah. Yo, hey, hey, wah. Yo, hey, hey, wah. Yo. This sequence connects to the Sephirah of Netzach and its essence of eternal victory. Chasin Kadosh Biro Tuta Nael Adata Tetufet Tet Nunayan. This sequence connects to the Sephirah of Hod and its essence of thankfulness and appreciation. Yachid Geye Lamcha Bene Zofre Kirushata Yud Gimelamed Pei Zayin Kuf. This sequence connects to the Sephirah of Yesod and its essence of creativity, creation, sexuality. The spine in the human body. Shavatenu kabel Ushmatia katenu Yodea talumot Shinkufav Sadit Yotaf. The first two letters, Shin and Kuf, have a gematria of 400, representing the four worlds that have 10 sephirot within 10 sephirot. They represent completion and create and perfection. The last four letters have a gematria of 506, just as the first verse, connecting to Ahavatinam, unconditional love. And we learn from this that the path to completion, the path to creation and perfection is to inject unconditional love in each step of our process. And the eighth verse of the Ana B'Koach we say in a whisper. This is the end of our Rosh Chodesh connection, but it's the beginning of our month. By utilizing the permutation in the way we have, joyfully, happily, we take control of the month. We remove the bitterness. We rearrange the letters, and we elevate the month. We remove the coldness from the Scorpio and connect to the Ayin Bet, the 72 names of God. Kodesh Tov to all. Does anyone have any questions? Kodesh Tov.
Kodesh Tov.
Kodesh Tov.
Have a beautiful day, you all. Shalom Gadol. A significant amount of serenity and peace in your life. And then we also Kodesh Tov.
Kodesh Tov. Thank you.
Shalom.
Thank you. Shalom.
Shalom. Kodesh Tov.